It's time now for Bucks Blue with host Dartley Borough Police Chief Joseph Kelly. Bucks Blue is a monthly spotlight show that focuses on highlighting community policing in your neighborhood. Here now is your host, Yardley Borough Police Chief Kelly.
And welcome to Bucks Blue on WBCB, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM. Stephen, today we have a very special guest calling in, Commissioner Daniel Outlaw, the former commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department, who also served as the former chief of the Portland Police Bureau, and before that, the former deputy chief of the Oakland Police Department, where she held numerous ranks. Commissioner Outlaw has received numerous awards, including the Police Executive Research Forum, otherwise known as PERF, Gary P. Hayes Award, the Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare Culture of Caring Award, and the Community Relations and Civic Engagement, as well as the United Negro College Fund Outstanding Youth Role Model Award, just to name a few. The commissioner earned her Bachelor of Arts in Sociology from the University of San Francisco, a Master's of Business Administration from Pepperdine University, and is a graduate of the PERF Senior Management Institute of Police, the Major Cities Association Police Executive Leadership Institute, and the FBI's National Executive Institute. The commissioner is a member of the International Association of Chiefs of Police Juvenile Justice Committee, the National Organization of Black Law Executives, and previously served in the Major Cities of Chiefs Association's Executive Board as a second vice president. So without further ado, I welcome on former Commissioner Danielle Outlaw.
Thanks, Chief. Good afternoon. I appreciate the invite. Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have you on. So, Commissioner, I think this is the first time since you moved on from Philadelphia that you're giving any type of public interview. I appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you about a few things that may draw some people into law enforcement by speaking about your journey.
Sure.
So I read as a child, you had a questionable opinion of the Oakland Police Department, the city where you grew up, and that perception later changed when you visited the PD. Could you share with your listeners a little bit about that journey? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that have skeptical opinions of law enforcement and how that might be changed by visiting.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with law enforcement in my family, and I quickly learned once moving to the East Coast that, you know, there's generations after generations after generations in law enforcement, specifically in the Philadelphia Police Department, which I thought was just absolutely amazing, but I didn't grow up with that.
And I'm one of those people, Commissioner.
I know, right? My grandfather, my dad, you know, they were in the military. My uncle, they were in the military. But yet again, not specifically having law enforcement in my family. And I think it makes a difference because when you grow up around cops, you see police. You know, you see the human being behind the badge almost immediately, or almost your entire life. So, for example, I think my sons have a certain level, to a certain extent, a certain level of comfort around police officers that they know because their parents are cops, right? And given that I didn't grow up around police officers, you know, my peer group, whether we were doing anything wrong or not, just based off of our experiences with law enforcement, when we were outside playing in the street, for example, until the streetlights came on, when the cops came, we ran because we were afraid of the police. And, you know, I could think of maybe 1 week in elementary school in the fourth grade where we had a DARE officer come in and, you know, brought the case of drugs. And that was the extent of when we had a positive interaction or an opportunity to fellowship with a police officer in a non-law enforcement way. And it wasn't until I got shipped off. I say shipped off because I think my mom tricked me. She knew what she was doing. I left my peer group that I had gone to school with up through eighth grade, and I got sent to an all-girls Catholic high school. And it was a requirement. The name of the school was Holy Names High School in Oakland. And it was a requirement in between semesters that we do some form of career exploration, and we did it for credit.
Okay.
And I was dared to sign up for the Oakland Police Department for a 2-week program immersion program with the Oakland Police Department. And given that I was an underclassman at the time, I didn't think that they would select me, one, because it was everybody wanted to do it, and they would, you know, typically choose 11th and 12th graders. But I signed up for it, and they messed around, and they selected me. And I had an opportunity to ride with Officer Tim Sanchez for 2 weeks and really immerse myself in not only the administrative side of how the Oakland Police Department was run and all of the different departments, but, you know, to be in a car with him side by side and just, you know, again, see the human being behind the badge and see that this was an individual who, you know, at the time, you know, could have been an uncle, you know, knew a lot about Oakland's history, would drive around neighborhoods and say, listen, this is what happened here. Let me tell you about Henry J. Kaiser. You know, here are the restaurants and here are the things. And that barrier that had been placed between myself as a young person and law enforcement slowly started to chip away because I saw that, hey, they're not so bad after all. And then at the end of this two-week program, they said, hey, before you leave, we have this program called the Explorer Program. And I said, well, what is that? And they said, well, you meet with other kids your age or, you know, high school kids every Wednesday in the evenings after school, and you just learn about different aspects of the police department. I'm like, why would I do that? And they said, well, you know, you get to work as a volunteer. It wasn't a paid position, but you get to work as a volunteer during the summer. And, you know, for special events, you get a cool uniform. It was this crazy brown uniform I'll never forget. but I said, let me see what they're talking about. And I started going to these meetings. And before I knew it, I found myself around peers that grew up admiring the police, wanted to be police officers themselves. And I was, you know, given that there was so much differing opinions in that room, and I went into it open-minded. I said, okay, well, you know what, maybe this might be a thing. I'm not ready to be a police officer just yet, but maybe they're not so bad. And when it came time to graduate from high school, I was the first in my generation to go to school, to go to college. And they said, whoa, wait. Before you're done here, we have this program called the Police Cadet Program. It's part-time employment. You now wear these cool light blue uniforms. It looks just like the police uniform. You have a duty belt, but, you know, the shirt is light blue and there's no gun, obviously. And we pay you $10 an hour. You have to be a college student. And I said, wow, I'm going to be rich. $10 an hour? You got it. And so they had sunk their teeth into me. I didn't realize that I was matriculating through this pipeline. And as I was matriculating through OPD's pipeline, I was learning, I was training, I was getting an opportunity again to interact and fellowship with police officers, see them in different light, go on ride-alongs, and actually do meaningful work within the community. And it really did have a large toll, a huge toll, actually, on swaying my opinion of law enforcement. And when it came time for me to finish college, which I did on time, undergrad, I thought I was going to go straight through and get a doctorate. I wanted to become a social psychologist, and life happened, as it does for a lot of us, and I found out that I was expecting my oldest son at the time. And, you know, life got real, and I said, ooh, I need a job. I need a job with benefits, and the police department was still there. So while my son was only 2 weeks old, I went through all the testing. I did the physical agility. I had no business being out there. But I became a police officer, and the rest is history. I would argue that my career path as a police officer and all the way up and through the ranks and work in the community is still in some form the work of a social psychologist. But I have absolutely no regrets, and I'm happy to have participated in a program that allowed me to open my eyes and see law enforcement through a totally different lens. Because had I not been able to do that while in high school as a sophomore, had I not answered that call or that dare, I know for a fact I wouldn't be sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in today.
And I love the story of that journey because it's very unorthodox, but it shows, I think there's a lesson here for police executives that may be listening, that these programs where we get the youth in the door, these programs where we get these young adults in the door, ride-alongs, police internships, explorer programs, can all be excellent feeders as we go through these struggles for recruitment.
Absolutely. I think it's about establishing the relationship. So, you know, obviously it took a few years from my sophomore year in high school all the way up and through me graduating from undergrad, you know, several years later. But this was an opportunity for relationships to be fostered, you know, developed and maintained. And it's really about trust. And especially with young people, you can't say I'm here today and then be gone tomorrow. You have to continuously work at it because you never know what's going on in that young person's life. And in my instance, my personal experience was, you know, the police coming into, you know, our family's home and taking away somebody that I loved and respected, that I was very close to. And as a young person, you don't care about the reason why your loved one was arrested, right? You just know that this very kind, gentle soul, the person that you know that you've grown up with, was taken away.
Correct.
And they're not there, you know, they're not there for Christmas. They're not there for Easter. They're not, you know, all of those things. Now, obviously, as you grow older and you become an adult and you learn more about accountability and consequences, you know, that's a different story. But I would even go, you know, as far to say that, you know, as police officers, when we're entering someone's home and you know you have to make an arrest and there's children involved or there's children present, be mindful of how you interact with those young people when you're there, because that could be the only time that they've seen a police officer, and that's that first impression is going to be the lasting impression that they have of the police for the rest of their lives. So it's not just, you know, great recruitment and having a strong pipeline, allowing young people from the community to matriculate through, but it's also being very intentional about community engagement and programming that you have available to bring your young people into your police department in a sense that they have a say in not only how they're providing service and how they're being policed, but they're learning at the same time why police do what they do. And, you know, again, here's what your rights are, but we all have a role to play. And I think it's just a great opportunity to have trusting dialogue and, you know, establish those relationships outside of a law enforcement action.
I absolutely agree with you. And every contact is an opportunity to move the bar on favorability of how we're seen by the outside. If we can, why don't we take our first break here, and when we come back, I'd like to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214.
We now return to Bucks Blue. Once again, here are your hosts, Hardy Borough Police Chief Joseph Kelly.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, February 2025. And we're on the phone with Commissioner Daniel Outlaw. And before we went to break, the commissioner was relaying a story about her journey into policing. And last thing I have to ask you on that, Commissioner, is that officer that had so much impact you rode the 2 weeks with, when you got to the Oakland PD, did you have an opportunity to serve with him again?
I absolutely did. And, in fact, when I got cut loose from field training, You know, during my first year, I was assigned to his squad.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, it was a really great time. So he continued on as a mentor, you know, one of the OGs in the squad, and I learned a lot from him, just from his demeanor and, you know, how he de-escalated situations, how he spoke to individuals. It was really a fun time.
So we at Yardley PD have what I thought was very unique. One of our corporals, Corporal Adam Clark, appeared on both Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and on Jeopardy. He did very, very well on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he became notorious on Jeopardy because he gave a final Jeopardy question of 42-31, the first Eagles Super Bowl score, was his wager, which made him pretty famous around the Philly area. But I've learned that you were also on a game show earlier in your life, if you want to share a little bit about that.
I can't shake that for some reason. Yeah, so I was on Wheel of Fortune, and it was a total fluke. I had grown up watching Wheel of Fortune religiously with my mother. May she rest in peace. But we loved watching Wheel of Fortune. We loved solving puzzles. And, you know, it always just seemed like this far-fetched thing that people do. You know, you end up on TV, it's a game show. And, you know, during the time when we used to watch the show, the gifts, you'd have to spend all the money and buy stuff you didn't want or whatever. So by now, by the time I made it on the show, they would just give you cash. I'll just tell folks out there now, if you go on Wheel of Fortune, have them take the taxes out up front. Never give a teenager that kind of money.
Here's a pro tip, right?
There's your tip. But it was a fluke because they happened to be on campus. And I was like, what is this line for? We saw a lot of people that obviously weren't students on campus, and there was a big, long line, and I'm asking, I'm supposed to be headed to class. And I said, well, what is this line for? And they said, hey, this is, you put your name in a big fishbowl, and if they draw your number, you get to go audition for Wheel of Fortune. I skipped class. I stood in that line. I put my name in that fishbowl, and lo and behold, 2 days later, they called me to audition. And my understanding was that there were people waiting for years and years and years to get on this show. So the fact that I was able, my name got pulled, and then two, I was able to, you know, get on there within a couple of days to audition. All the auditions were within one day, and I was called back, I think later that evening or something like that, to say I'd made the show. And it was an amazing time. You actually film the entire week. If you make it to the championship round, you film the entire week in one day.
Wow.
So I'd won my first round, or my first game, or I think I was on a Tuesday or something like that. So I'd won that game, and I had to sit around and wait for the championship round, which was Friday, in air quotes, right? But it was really like 4 o'clock in the morning. And at this point, you know, I'm 19 years old. I was like, hey, I got my money. I'm good. You know, and I was exhausted because they sequestered us like a jury. We'd been there since 4 o'clock in the morning.
And I think they make you change outfits, right? So it looks like it looks like the day changed?
No, we
didn't.
So
okay.
I was wondering at some point if anybody was going to figure out that we had on the same clothes.
I think Jeopardy, they made him change his outfit, yeah.
No, we didn't. But you know what? It really didn't matter because it was our college sweatshirts anyway. You know, but, you know, I kicked myself because I didn't win the championship round. A young man from Emory University down in Atlanta did. But it was a fun time. You know, we did promos and commercials and you know, modeled Vanna White's clothes and did all the, you know, modeling and stuff for prizes. And it was fun. And I think that was my first real exposure to not only being in front of cameras, but showing personality and doing all the things. And it didn't air for like 6 months, so you couldn't say anything.
Okay.
People want to know.
Yeah, how'd you do?
Won,
I can't tell you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I guess I did all right. You know, but it was a fun time. And for some reason, that resurfaced when I became the chief in Portland, you know, they try to dig and find any little thing they can on you. And I was almost certain that the internet was completely free of any Wheel of Fortune references, but for some reason, they were able to find it.
I got bad news for you. I found it real easy.
Yay.
So it's back in the mainstream.
It was a good experience, though.
So you served in Oakland like most of us do in our first job, right? You served in pretty much every bureau, pretty much every rank coming up, which is typical for us. Mm-hmm. Of those positions, of those bureaus, of those assignments, which was your favorite and why?
Patrol sergeant. It was, well, I'm, if we're being honest, of course we're being honest, I'll say, you know, that was a job where I knew I had added responsibilities. I felt the camaraderie of my squad, of my team, right? It's still a leadership role. I think it's the hardest jump to make because you're going from peer to supervisor.
Right.
But because we worked so well together, and this is where I'm saying, you know, I'm being honest. Of course I'm being honest. We had bad days off. And, you know, we worked 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. So there was no one around in the building. You know, all of the executives were gone because they were on their days off. So we were really just kind of out there. Of course we had oversight and leadership, but we were out there figuring it out on our own. Meaning if we came across something we weren't really sure of, yeah, of course, I could call folks and ask, hey, how do we handle blah, blah, blah. But a lot of our team strengthening and building happened because we were there when no one else was really working. And so we had the opportunity to, you know, every day, especially in Oakland, every day it was something different. And we worked really, really well together. But in that job, let me tell you, 5 p.m. hit or my day is off, I didn't have to answer the phone. That's the other good thing.
Yep. I think Right. I talked to a lot of police officers who have gone through the ranks, and they all say the same thing about sergeant, right? You do a lot of work while you're there. You have a lot of impact. You're still the boss, but you don't have to worry about a lot of this administrative nonsense and getting called after hours, which,
not at all.
That happens a lot as we ascend up.
So those are the two good things, right? So, look, the folks weren't around because we worked on the weekends and a little bit of the weekday, and I didn't have to answer my phone on my days off. And that's important in the sense that if you have an issue now with unplugging, you know, once you're at home,
right.
Work is work, home is home. It makes it that much easier if you know you don't have to carry two phones with you, or you don't have to, you know, answer a call if something happens. And if it's really, really bad, they know how to reach you on the other phone. So that was a fun time because we were all learning and growing and developing together at the same time and still dealing with sometimes some of the most violent and some of the most dangerous issues in the street of Oakland. But because we were such a tight-knit crew, we figured it out together, and we worked really well together.
So let me flip that question real quick, and this one might be just as easy to answer. Which unit or position, job assignment, were you happy to transfer out of?
I was a public information officer. You know, this is ironic. I was a public information officer for 4 years as an officer before I got promoted to sergeant.
Okay.
And I stayed in that role for a little bit as a sergeant and then moved on. When I left that job as PIO, I said, I never, ever, ever want to work in the chief's office ever again.
How'd that work out for you? Not too good, huh?
Probably not. And, you know, at the time, the public information officer was a one-person show, you know, so it was always on call, always in front of a camera, having to learn things, you know, at the highest level, the strategic level, having an understanding of why things are done the way they are. And those are all great things, right? You should want to know those things. But I didn't fully have that appreciation of what I was learning and what I was exposed to at the time, at that rank. now, obviously, as I've progressed and, you know, made my way up the chain and promoted, I think because of that experience that I had as a PIO, as a public information officer, it helped me that much more because I'd seen it, I'd heard it, I'd been in the rooms. But I said I never wanted to do that work again because I felt the pressure and I saw the stress that the executives on that floor endured day in, day out at the job, not at the job, on duty, off duty. So it's funny that I ended up, I landed where I did, but I think that was one job where I for sure said, I'm good. I'm okay if I never do this job again.
Makes a lot of sense. We're going to take our second break right now, Commissioner, and if you could hold on, sure. We'll pick up on the other side.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214.
We now return to Bucks Blue. Once again, here are your hosts, Hardy Borough Police Chief Joseph Kelly.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, February 2025, 107.3 FM, 1490 AM. And we are on the phone with Commissioner Danielle Outlaw, who's been gracious to give us an hour to talk a little bit about her journey in law enforcement. And Commissioner, I think that most police chiefs and most police commanders are in their seat largely because someone recognized something in them when they were a young police officer, when they were a young supervisor, and helped to encourage you, cultivate you, mentor you. Did you have someone like that at Oakland PD?
I think I had a few people like that saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, quite frankly. I was just kind of, you know, looking at what was ahead at the time. You know, I remember my first day in patrol, we had to, you know, stand up in front of everybody and recite the police officer's constitution, and folks were like, gosh, you're just so happy. I was like, yeah, it's like the first day of school. I'm excited. And it's funny because looking back on it, I'm almost certain that I said also that I was excited because every day, and again, every day is something different, but you're not sitting behind a desk, right? And I really wanted to be in a career where I can be out and about and engage with people and not be locked into one thing. And early on, I saw, you know, even with the field training officers I was placed with and, you know, the assignments that I was placed in, I didn't put in for, but I was placed in, I realized that I had been identified, you know, early on as someone that they were, you know, positioning for leadership. And that's something that I think is important to do even today for police chiefs or leadership teams now. Identify your up-and-comers and get them ready, because folks aren't going to be sitting in these seats forever.
Agreed.
God bless you if you want to, but there's nothing worse, I think, than, one, not having a succession plan, and two, not having a bench of people ready and waiting to go in the event of an emergency or in the event of, you know what, I need to step down and feel comfortable knowing that this is being left in good hands. And this is at all ranks. And I think where leaders get themselves in trouble sometimes is making the assumption that they're going to be there forever, so there's no need to develop others. But also not developing others because, they just think it's not important. It's not a priority. And the problem with thinking that way is that folks get bored. You get bright-eyed, bushy-tailed folks ready to come in and do some stuff. And especially nowadays, the individuals or the demographic, you know, from where we're recruiting, folks want to, nowadays, they want a different job every year or so.
Yeah,
right?
Patience is not the young person's virtue right now.
Yeah. And the issue with that is, I wouldn't put that on them, it's that policing hasn't adapted yet. We have the ability as organizations and even within this industry to say, look, it's like, you know, I tell people it's the equivalent of being in the private sector and you can have 15 different jobs. There's so many different things that you could do as a sworn police officer or even as a professional member of the team, right? You know, if you want to work in the lab somewhere, there's so many different things that you can do. Why lock someone in? So when you don't develop them, you know, I used to say stuff like, okay, you're going to be out on vacation for 2 weeks. Who's acting for you? Right? That's where a lot of us got, and that's what I did. I was enacting a lot. You know, I was enacting captain before I was made a captain. I was enacting lieutenant before I was made a lieutenant. I was enacting sergeant before I was made, you know. And then before I was promoted to deputy chief, I filled in for my boss when he was gone. It's that experience in being developed that gets the bench ready.
And I think you're absolutely right. Yep.
Yeah, and for some reason, I don't know what it is, folks aren't as inclined to do that, to get people ready, put them in the positions, and yes, obviously, you know, if it's an emergent situation or if we're in a crisis, that might not be the best time, you know, to do that, or even if you do, you know, you're going to have somebody with more seniority kind of assisting them, but day-to-day stuff, this is when people learn, and employees will get bored. They'll either leave and go somewhere else, or they'll check out, and they're not going to give you their absolute best as far as performance goes because they don't believe that their intellect or the skill set that they bring to the organization is valued. And that, I think, is a waste because we're going out of our way to spend all this money to recruit, to bring the best of the best in, to bring in differing thoughts and differing views of how the world is seen and different professions. And, you know, I used to tell people, you don't have to have law enforcement experience. I want you to have common sense. We'll teach you the rest. But it's all of that varying degrees of experience that people bring, and then they're just shut down because you don't allow them to utilize it in the workplace. It's really, I think, a waste of time and effort on the recruitment end if you're not putting that same effort in to engage and retain them. And then now you find yourself dealing with these high numbers of attrition on the back end.
And I had recruiting, Mark, to talk about later, but I do want to expand on what you're talking about with that. I think police departments around the country also need to be honest when they do those recruitings. Some of these larger departments show these videos, right, that are not in touch with what the officers do day to day. So essentially they're selling them the special operations video, right? And when they come in, they're not getting that. And then there's a disconnect, which leads to motivation problems.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And listen, I would tell people, you're not coming here. You're not rappelling down buildings. You're not, you're just not doing all of that. The most of your day, a lot of the day, you're going to be sitting. So you're going to have to figure out a way to get out of your car, get out and engage. If you're an introvert, you better figure out how to strike up a conversation with a total stranger, you know, because a lot of it is interpersonal skills. A lot of it is conflict mediation. A lot of it is problem solving.
Agreed.
And a lot of it has absolutely nothing to do with law enforcement whatsoever. But because someone's going to answer, you know, the call when someone dials 911, we get it anyway. And I think it behooves agencies, especially if you have the money to do it, to allow individuals to see themselves in the role. So for someone like me, you know, a brand new mom out there, you know, I used to hear from women a lot, you know, I have kids at home, it's just me, I don't think I can do this. And I'm like, listen, let me tell you how the rest of us figured it out, right? Here's how you establish your support circle. Here's how, you know, and I couldn't make promises because you're going to have some, you're not going to have a really good schedule when you first start, right?
Right.
But with a support circle or, you know, some strategies from other women that's gone through it, this may or may not help, but it doesn't, don't count yourself out. Don't count yourself out because, again, you didn't grow up in a law enforcement family or, you know, you have young children at home or this is a third career for you and you don't think you can do it. And I said, well, let me tell you why I think you can't, right? So if I go to a recruiting event and I know I'm on my second job, my third job or whatever, I'm drawing a retirement from somewhere else, but I still want to give back. I still have a lot of gas in the tank. If I see, you know, this video of people hopping out of helicopters and rappelling down the sides of buildings, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe this isn't for me. Because we're not allowing our materials to reflect who we're trying to attract.
See, that's one now, way I was thinking on the other side, right? We're selling something that people want. But you raise an excellent point. We might be selling something that people are afraid of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't think of it from that way. That's an excellent point.
I mean, some people, they want to do that. Absolutely.
Right,
you got
right.
it. You want to hop out of buildings and do all that, we have just the place for you. But we also have to make sure that we're appealing to the individuals that would be great fits for other aspects of policing. You know, don't just market heavy towards one niche. And policing, show the whole part, show everything. Same goes for dispatchers.
Exactly right, and we're having, you know, that's we don't have dispatchers in our department. We use a countywide system, but for the mm-hmm. larger departments that do, there's a recruiting crisis going on there as well.
Yep.
So I don't want to skip over to Portland Police Department. I know you work there, but I would like, because we're in the Philadelphia area, to talk a little bit about what drew you out to the East Coast. It's a 3,000-mile journey. You're leaving behind everything you've always known, right? So what drew you out here?
And it's cold.
It's freezing out here. I imagine part of it's the cheesesteaks, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But really, what made you cross the country and put your former life behind?
Well, I got a phone call. From folks in Philadelphia asking for me to consider applying for the job. At this time, I left Oakland, had been in Portland as the chief for 2 years, and I'd brought the ceasefire gun strategy that we'd implemented in Oakland to Portland. Our gun violence numbers had reduced drastically through our reorg. And adopting the strategy. And also at the time, Portland, Oregon, the police department there, the police bureau, as they call it, was under and still is under a consent decree.
Okay.
For use of force against those who are in crisis and mentally ill. And I was able to get along with the team there in substantial compliance with that consent decree in the 2 years that I was there, and they had been working on this for a few years at this point. And I believed, you know, once they offered me the job in Philadelphia, I was like, well, you leave a place better than you found it. And I'd really accomplished a heck of a lot in a short amount of time. So I really didn't believe that I was turning my back on the city or you know, using Portland as a stepping stone, I really believed that I'd left the agency in a good place. So I said, why not? At that time, my oldest was in college down in Atlanta, and my youngest decided that he would stay back in Oakland with his dad and his stepmom and his new little sister at the time. And he commuted. It was an hour and a half flight between Oakland and Portland, so he was flying back and forth. But by the time Philadelphia was offered, both of my boys were in college. So it made it that much easier to say, okay, I can make this change. And I had family in Philadelphia as well.
Okay.
So it made the decision a lot easier. But, I mean, I will tell you, it's different on the East Coast. It's different. You know, a lot of folks on the East Coast think that policing on the West Coast is all the same. It is not. You know, regionally, even in, you know, in California, Northern California is different than Southern California. California is different than the Pacific Northwest, which is Washington and Oregon. So I gained a lot of useful experience with just kind of navigating and maneuvering culturally, you know, on the West Coast and dealing with, you name it, a little bit of everything under the sun. I think that experience was extremely relevant with me accepting the job in Philadelphia and applying it here on the East Coast.
Thank you for sharing that. We are going to go to our last break. When I get back, I want to talk a little bit more about that transition to the East Coast and some of your experiences.
You got it.
You won't see termites crawling across your floor, but thousands might be devouring the wood in your walls, weakening the structure of your home. For over 50 years, Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley has been in the exterminating business. If you think you have a pest problem, they're the experts. Call them today at 215-639-5455. That's 215-639-5455 for TPPC. Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley gives your home or business peace of mind, knowing your pest problem is in their hands. Located at 1560 Bristol Pike in Bensalem, they use only EPA-approved material applied by licensed technicians. Call Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley at 215-639-5455.
Capital Health's Primary Care Network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
We now return to Bucks Blue. Once again, here are your hosts, Hartley Borough Police Chief Joseph Kelly.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, February 2025. On the phone with Commissioner Daniel Outlaw. And Commissioner, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about you arriving in Philadelphia and the transition here. One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, was taking over one of these large, complex organizations like the Philly PD. For that, you know, for that matter, the same was true when you went to Portland Police Bureau. You have a very large organization that's kind of set in its ways. A lot of the players there, as you mentioned, are generational, right? They're children and grandchildren of police officers who served there. What stands out in your memory from those first couple of weeks, first couple of months, in how you established your goals and objectives?
Well, the first couple of months, it was 2020, and within the first couple of months, he had a corporal murdered. The pandemic hit, this thing called COVID, with this silent killer that no one knew anything about.
So they took it easy on you.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you name it. All the things that would happen once in a professional lifetime happened simultaneously. Then there was the murder of George Floyd. Then it was the civil unrest around the country, and then eventually, you know, in Philadelphia, then we had our own critical incident. It was just one thing after the other, fighting for PPE and equipment, all while being asked, well, what's your plan?
Mm-hmm.
And I did roll out a plan within the first 90 days. One of my biggest takeaways from that, though, was you have to be willing to adapt to what's going on and show some flexibility, right? So if you come in as a new chief and say, or a new commissioner, superintendent, director, wherever, you know, it's called,
right,
your
neck
of the world, and say, I'm going to do this within the first 30 days, I'm going to do this within the first 60 days, and then 90 days, and then 100 days, I mean, you got to throw all of that out of the window. And it's important because you never know what'll happen. And in my case, it was everything, you know, and I would tell people, unless they were a chief of police back in, you know, during the Spanish flu, I don't even know if that was comparable. It's really not much, you know, you can compare to that experience-wise, because a lot of it was figuring out as we went, building the plane as we flew it, meaning, okay, we still have to arrest people. We still have to walk into people's homes. We don't have masks. We don't have enough cars to allow individuals to ride solo. You know, what do we do? Who can we partner with? What is policy going to be around taking people into custody? The jails are crowded. How do we work with the courts to ensure that, you know, and the prosecutor's office or the DA's office to ensure that these charges stick and they don't get lost or forgotten? All these warrants, who's going to go back and arrest these folks, right? These were things that no one had to come up with before in our professional lifetimes that we were working towards, all while we're seeing crime increase as it did in other major cities around the country. So, you know, and by the way, folks were still saying, oh, and by the way, you were hired to, folks like to say reform. I like to say transform, because when you say reform, that means all things are terrible. I don't agree with that. There's a lot of great qualities and a lot of great things that the Philadelphia police were doing prior to my arrival, and they just needed to be expanded upon. And then some stuff, you know, we had to change. So, you know, gone are the days of being a one-trick pony where you come in and focus on one thing. We were literally juggling multiple things all at once during that very critical time. And a proud moment for me is to be able to say, you know, of course it's a marathon and not a sprint, but the numbers are falling, and a framework was put in place, you know, a few years ago. And I think we're starting to see, you know, reap the benefits of that framework with some enhancements, you know, with the leaders that have taken over since. But it's working. And so, you know, I may not have been able to see the fruits of all of my labor while there, but it's a good feeling to know that I led during one of the most challenging times in the history of policing.
And I know you and I have spoken about this before, but all major cities were going through struggles, right? But I think that you, New York City, and maybe a handful of others probably had the most challenging positions during those times. So kudos for everything you did. Was there one program or initiative that you put in place at Philly that, you know, you're most proud of, that one thing, because it was something you saw from start to finish that they're still using today?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of really, I want to make this very clear, there's a lot of strong people there that they were already doing some really great work. But
good point.
A matter of just kind of refining the work that was being done, and the use of data from start to finish in establishing a crime-fighting framework was really, really important. I think a bunch ball, you know, when the boys were smaller playing soccer, remember, everybody just runs after wherever the ball is. And that doesn't work nowadays in policing, because we don't have the bodies to put a cop on every corner. We don't have or to put a cop everywhere where someone feels. And that's another thing, right? Leaders nowadays, we're fighting against perception. Even though the data may say something's different, you're also appealing to how our communities feel. And we don't always have the resources to put individuals or to put officers, or even, you know, depending on where you are in the world, non-sworn police employees in that location to make them feel safer, right? So you have to use technology as a force multiplier. And you also have to use data and be really smart about where you deploy. So my big thing was, look, it might hurt now. You might feel like you're not safe, but the data, the numbers aren't showing us that you have issues here, right? Now, quality of life issues, we got to partner with other agencies in the city to address those. But we sent our police officers to the most dangerous areas or the areas that had whatever their issue was for that particular area so it can be addressed. And we saw the numbers slowly chip away and decrease. And I think that's really important to note because you see year over year, since the numbers really, really, really spiked, you see year over year the numbers have been going down. And I think that's going to continue as that framework remains in place and they continue to enhance it as time goes by.
And I think you identified something there that is so critical to police leadership. We not only have to manage actualities. We know where the problems are, right? The data shows us where the problem, but you have to manage that perception as well. And sometimes these things are in conflict, and that's what takes special people to do it. So thank you for sharing that. One of the things I was going to ask you, and this one's a little bit on the softer side, but Raiders, Seahawks, or Eagles?
You know what? It's funny. When I was announced, they asked me if I was an Eagles fan, and I was like, you know, the Raiders were still in Oakland at the time. So it's okay now. Since the Raiders have long moved on to Vegas, I've been an Eagles fan since I've been out here. I'm proud of their win. I'm happy for the city. It's great to see the positive energy, just considering everything that's been going on. And, I wore green to work last week. And, you know, up here in New York, that wasn't really welcomed too much. But I didn't have a problem with wearing my green suit.
If nobody's listening, I'm a Giants fan and I have to work down here. So I'm especially in the last 10 years, it's been a tough journey. It's been a real tough journey.
Oh, that's too bad for you.
Advice for young ladies and young men who are listening right now and saying, I just don't know if that job's for me. What should they do? What's your recommendation to young people who may or may not be sure, and I mean law enforcement at all levels, right? Local police, county, state, or even the federal agencies who are having trouble. What would you tell those people?
You know what, when I was talking to you earlier about bringing young people in, I forgot to mention that during my time down there, we formed a youth advisory commission. People thought I was crazy. What do you mean you're bringing kids from all over the city to come in and provide input on policy or just ask questions if they're not sure? I would say take advantage of any opportunities where you have to interact with police, whether it's your neighborhood police officer or if the police department is sponsoring something. You don't even have to know. You don't have to know what you want to be when you grow up, right? It's okay. But if it's something that you're considering or you heard that it might be a worthwhile job and another way to give back to your community, check it out, right? Ask questions. And if it's not for you, then it's not for you. I've seen individuals, so people that I was a police cadet with, they didn't continue on to be police officers like they thought, but they did work in the crime lab or they became a dispatcher or they, you know, worked in another professional assignment within the police department, or it at least got them that exposure, and now they don't have that same intrepidation that they once felt when they were around a cop. So I think it's a win-win. Whether they become a police officer or not, we're still establishing trust amongst our young people in the communities. But I would just say again, you know, check it out, ask questions, push back, and go on ride-alongs for sure.
I think that's all sound advice. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, I get questioned a lot, well, what should I major in college if I'm going to be a police officer? And I said, anything you want. The more diverse we are in thinking, as well as diversity in general, the better off that police department's going to be.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. You know, a lot of my colleagues back in the day, they were getting, you know, their graduate degrees in public administration. And I was like, well, why would you get a degree in something that you do all day, every day? Right?
Exactly.
So that's what made me get an MBA. You know, I can run a business. I can translate that to the private sector. I mean, there's so many different things out there in the world that can be transferred into your work in law enforcement. So the more, you know, just again, I'm big into differing opinions and diverging thoughts and not having everyone look, sound, and feel the same. And I think it's really important. So no, it's not necessary to get a degree in criminal justice or administration of justice. If you want to, you know, have at it. But I would encourage individuals in school to get something that's flexible and can be applied anywhere.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. This hour has been... It's been a pleasure to getting to know you and for sharing your story with everyone in the region. Again, thanks for coming on, and please stand by for Yardley Borough on air with your mayor, Chris Harding.